the Hagman Report. Our guest through this hour and from the last segment is Peter Barry Chowka. He's a writer, a journalist for American Thinker, and he's been writing some excellent pieces also on Hagman Report exclusively. Folks, you can check out both his work on American Thinker and Hagman Report. And we've been talking about the healthcare situation that is ongoing here in the United States with this broken Congress that can't seem to get anything done. And Peter, before the break, the question was, is there any way that these people will be able to come together for a straight repeal only, going back to, I guess the question would be, is there any way we can remove government from healthcare in the way that it was before Obamacare?
We would hope, Joe, that it would be possible, but to be realistic, I would say it's probably not possible. And the vote last night or this morning in the Senate showed that to be the case. That was pretty much a skinny vote, or whatever they were calling it, to try to scale down Obamacare. It wasn't exactly a total repeal, but they couldn't even agree on that. The Democrats, meanwhile, are lined up. 100% of their membership in the House and the Senate is going to vote against any Republican plan for repeal, replacement, or whatever. And you notice Senator Schumer last night in his little speech after the vote was claiming that, oh, it's time to come together for the Republicans to reach out with the Democrats and work for a unified solution, which, God forbid, I hope that doesn't happen, because the thing that the Democrats will hold out for is a bigger government plan, more socialized medicine, and the fast track to single payer. That's their agenda. That's their bottom line. So we have got to hold the line on that. I think I made mention in a recent appearance with you guys that what it comes down to for me now, and I think we have to think of it in these terms, is repealing Obamacare in our own lives. If it's not going to be done by the Congress or by our representatives, then we just have to take steps as we can in our own lives to do our health care apart from this crazy, toxic, totalitarian, tyrannical system of health care, which we see in full force in Britain, and it's in half force here. I'd say it's two-thirds of American health care is now tyrannical, and we're quickly closing the gap to 100%, but this means take control of your own health, try to live preventatively, study the field of nutritional supplements, go for innovative therapies when you can, certainly engage conventional medicine when you have to, if you fracture a bone or you need surgery or something. But, you know, there's a lot we can do still as Americans while we have the freedom. So, you know, I'm thinking about it. I've always pretty much thought about it in that way and tried to live my life in that way. But I don't think we can hope for reform of this system from the federal government. You know, interestingly, Sean Hannity, who, as you know, I've been monitoring closely in my reporting on Fox News and have been in touch with him directly from time to time off the record recently, but I monitor his radio and television programs routinely. And even as recently as today, he talked a lot about the health care debacle, the vote in the Senate. And he's been presenting physicians for the past 5 years or so who believe in or are practicing direct care, concierge medicine, where you pay as you go. The patient pays a monthly fee, which can be as little as $50, and that entitles the patient to pretty much routine care in the doctor's office. It includes a lot of testing procedures for no additional costs, including even x-rays, which are done in the office. And it's such a cost-saving factor, it's just mind-boggling when you compare it to the cost of insurance or government insurance. I mean, at this point, the cost of medicine in the United States in total is over $3.2 trillion a year. That's trillion with a T, and it comes down to a per capita cost of $10,000 per year for every American man, woman, and child in the country. And now, of course, I'm spending much less than that on conventional medicine. So if somebody's taking up more of my share, which is how it works. But it, that doesn't have to be the case. You can do a far more cost-effective way, and this concierge or direct care is a way. So that could be a way with, say, medical savings accounts, to put money aside, other solutions that have been offered, but they never seem to make it into the debate in the Congress. God forbid the media is not going to cover, except in cases like Sean Hannity's show or what we're doing here today or some other alternative programs. It's just not a factor in discussion. So I don't know. I don't have a crystal ball, but I'm very dispirited by what we saw happen in the Congress within the last 24 hours, and I say, God help us. Now, you also wondered what could be the motivation of Senator John McCain for voting as he did. And there again, God only knows, but some have said, well, President Trump is responsible because he insulted John McCain on several occasions by saying he was not a war hero because he was captured and became a prisoner of war, whatever. But, John McCain is a big boy. He's played hardball politics. I think he's probably gotten over those perceived slights. And in fact, President Trump has reached out to Senator McCain on a number of occasions since he has been the president. So there's no excuse for that excuse. I would suggest instead that the reason lies within John McCain's deepest feelings about who he is and how he wants to be thought of and now remembered by history. He's always been described as the liberal press's favorite Republican. You know, he's really the classic rhino Republican in name only. And I think he's decided now that he's looking at a very, very difficult health situation with his recently diagnosed glioblastoma brain cancer, that this is the path he's going to go down. Is he going to take a stand for conservative traditions, beliefs, and a path towards repealing Obamacare? No, probably because in his heart of hearts, that's not where he's at. That's not what he believes. And plus, by voting as he did last night, he's getting accolades from the left-wing press. So, it could be as simple as that. But doesn't it make you angry to think that it comes down to the opinion, the ill-informed opinion at that, of one individual to keep us in this cage, this trap, this prison of Obamacare, possibly in perpetuity now?
And Peter, I wish you were right about him, being concerned about how he's going to be remembered and how he's leaving the country. But from where I sit, this is a guy who met with, some of the worst ISIS fighters in Syria, as calling them moderate rebels. This is a guy who's been a war hawk and, has taken large sums of money to push for intervention in Libya and Syria and this whole, Arab Spring that we saw being on Obama's side. I tend to believe that he does what he does for the money and for all the wrong reasons. And I think if he actually did sit down and was honest about, worried about his legacy and what he's leaving, that he would make different choices. And, it's, I never liked John McCain. I never had much respect for him. He's like a Lindsey Graham and a few others who, they're always on the wrong side of every issue. And
Joe, you're making too much sense, Joe.
Well, it's frustrating, to see people defend him and, oh, a war hero. You know, what he went through in the past, it's tragic and terrible,
is he even a war hero? I mean,
that's what they try to say.
When Donald Trump criticized him for being a quote hero because he was captured. I mean, I haven't thoroughly explored John McCain's background and career at that point, but there are reports that he's not a hero to the extent that he and his hagiographic biographers claim.
That's right.
Course,
and Peter,
we wish him well. I mean, I don't wish the man ill. I hope, somehow he can recover. There is a 4% chance that he will live for 5 years with that cancer, and God bless him. I hope he makes it. But in my opinion, I agree with you, Joe. He's an embarrassment. He's a classic rhino. he should just become a Democrat, you know, out himself as a Democrat, because that's what he is.
Well, there were some papers. I just want to mention this because I think it's relevant and important. There were some papers released, declassified, about John McCain, and I'm not sure exactly when they were. I'll have to find them. I read them, and they've been authenticated. What he did was his biography, autobiography, or his account. The accounts written about him were embellished. I mean, he gave away supply line routes and such during his captivity. I understand he was being tortured. I get all that. But there were other issues as well. We're talking like 50 or 60 pages worth of pretty damning information about John McCain during his time in Vietnam. But then misrepresent that.
Too, you know, and we can go all the way down this rabbit hole. Other prisoners of war,
right.
He never, that many people who were there and observed this say that he knew the locations of other prisoners of war, but refused to tell the Americans even when he got back, and whether that was part of the brainwashing he endured. There's a lot of questions as to his loyalty.
But even to the ISIS, and more relevant, more recent, the ISIS, the reformation of the Middle East, the power structure, I think that's important. But I don't get too far in the weeds on that. But Peter, I just want to...
Add before we close on this, what happened with John McCain 50 years ago in Vietnam when he was a prisoner is still relevant, because that's the biography that he relied on, that hyped up, pumped up, hagiographic biography, the war hero, the great war hero who withstood all the pressure and the torture. That's what started to get him elected. It got him noticed. It got him press and PR. And he's been in the Congress pretty much ever since, shortly after he was released in 1975 or so.
That's a good point.
So, you know, I mean, that's part of his history that it really is still relevant to this day. If we hadn't been fed that bill of goods about him from the beginning in the 1970s, we might not have had to endure John McCain Rhino for all these decades since then.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Okay.
Not to get too far away from what we were just talking about, but this is something I wanted to bring up last segment when we were getting into the repeal and whatnot. I don't know how many people have seen this story or stories like this, and this is just a small microcosm, but when we talk about the media deception and how they're trying to spin this, there were, as a New York City couple, the guy was a chiropractor. Him and his wife committed suicide by jumping to their death in an apartment building off Park Avenue. They left suicide notes referencing their children who were still in the apartment that needed to be cared for, also stating that they had medical issues and could not afford health care. Well, some in the media have turned around. Trump made us jump. New York couple blamed suicide on health care costs under Trump. And at face value, I've seen, you know, read comments and people are like, yeah, you know, it's Trump's fault. But when you see stories like this, what has Trump done that has made healthcare the way it is today? Nothing. Everything he's trying to do has been blocked, and even the promises he ran on repealing Obamacare, getting taking back healthcare to the private sector, none of that has happened. And the media is turning around trying to blame because the healthcare is in the news now, and they're, you know, the fighting in the Congress and Senate and with the media versus the public. They're trying to paint this picture that, you know, Trump is the reason behind the current healthcare fiasco. Do you think,
Joe, that's a perfect example of what I was talking about earlier, that no matter what happens in the reality, the fake news that we are fed by the mainstream media is going to prevail. So here is a case that probably has, as you said, nothing to do at all with President Trump, and it may not even have anything to do with the issue they claim that they are committing suicide because they can't afford medical care or whatever. You know, an interesting insight into that whole issue is, starting little more than a decade ago, studies began to be published in the scientific literature, the reputable mainstream scientific literature, particularly by several MDs associated with Harvard University. And these MDs, by the way, were in favor of socialized medicine and single payer. And they claimed they were doing studies and reports and analyses of bankruptcy in the United States. And they claimed that the number one cause of bankruptcy, something like 600,000 cases a year were directly attributable to people who were bankrupted by their medical costs because they couldn't afford insurance or couldn't get insurance or whatever. And it turned out that these studies were seriously flawed, hyped up, and debunked. And yet, they served their purpose, and in the build-up and the lead-up to Obamacare, studies like that were constantly thrown out there by the Obamacare promoters and the media saying, see, this is a perfect example of how people are not only dying in the streets for lack of medical care because they can't afford it or they have pre-existing conditions, but they're being bankrupted and have to live in their cars because of the medical care system in this country because we don't have socialized medicine. So we face such a complete trap of fake news now, of lies, that really it's, I mean, if not for the internet and alternative sources, we'd be in deeper trouble than we even are. But still, the mainstream media is almost a complete loss.
Yeah.
And, you know, but which is why, again, as I said, I think previously when we were talking about Fox News and the cable news wars, which I'm still writing about, by the way, and I'll have a story at American Thinker tomorrow, I think, or Sunday, a feature story on the latest in the cable news wars from the perspective of the ratings. And it's kind of an interesting and I think amusing little story to get off of the really serious stuff here for a moment. But
any chance, Peter, I don't mean to overtalk you. I just, before we get too far off of that track, is there any chance that maybe we could get a little surprise nugget of that, or are you required to wait till tomorrow?
No, not at all. Not at all. In fact, I'll post the story tonight at Hagman Report. But the lead of it is that on Monday, this past Monday, for anywhere between 6 and 12 hours, the lead story at the Drudge Report was a headline which claimed that MSNBC was now in the lead and had won the ratings. And right under that bold headline at the top was a photograph, a color photograph of Rachel Maddow of MSNBC.
Right.
And I concluded that that was probably clickbait, that for a Drudge's largely conservative audience, if you say, hey, MSNBC is now beating Fox News, people who are conservative and who like Fox News are going to click on that article, right? Anyway, I did some research on that, including studying the competing news releases put out by MSNBC and Fox News, and I also spoke on and off the record with the head of the public relations section at Fox News and put an article together and tried to go through this these competing claims that we see. I mean, if you pay attention to the ratings at all, which I do just kind of out of interest that I've long had in the media and in television and in ratings, but basically every cable channel and broadcast network now, and there are many hundreds of them out there, they all look at the raw data of the ratings and they try to make a case for why they are winning in some demographic, in some slice and dice little percentage of the population, which is smaller and smaller as fewer and fewer people are actually watching TV now in a conventional way. More people are just watching clips and YouTube on their phones or their tablets. But I put a lot of this into an article and tried to make it hopefully entertaining and slightly lighter reading. And actually, as I was rereading the article for the nth time this morning, proofreading it again, I was laughing to myself and thinking, you know, this is actually the theater of the absurd, that this is the world we've got now where, you know, we're really victims of the media, even those of us who feel that we understand it or we're critiquing it or monitoring it for professional or journalistic purposes. It's still a very strange world. It's a mediated reality, as Jerry Mander called it in his book Four Arguments for the Elimination of Television in the 1970s. Very interesting book, still one of my favorites. That basically, even if we have seen through the fake news and the fake reality that the media give us, we are still largely addicted to it because this is the way we process reality. I mean, just in the way I covered the story of the case of Charlie Gard, I didn't set foot outside of my house to cover it. It was all online, no direct contact with the principals, and ultimately there's no substitute for actually being there on the ground, which it was not feasible for me to do. And even if I had been able to get myself to London, the family was very private, and I doubt that they would talk with anybody from the media. They were very well protected, understandably. So, you know, this is the reality that we're swimming in now, and we really have to make the best of it. But, you know, I'm still trying to critique it and understand it, critique it, write about it, and put it in its proper place. And that place, again, to make this point, is that, yes, there is a place for the mainstream media, but hopefully a lesser and lesser place as we develop networks and sources and more primary sources to information and people who really know what's going on. And you mentioned earlier your guest last night, Matt Bracken. And I paid very close attention to his segment on your program, and I thought, there is a person who should be on Fox News, you know, for more than 2 minutes, which Fox News allots a guest generally. And thank God he had 90 minutes on your show. But, you know, you could learn more from listening to him for a few minutes or an hour and a half than days of monitoring the mainstream media, even Fox News. So we have these options now. We have options like the Hagman Report, the Drudge Report, internet print reporting, streaming, podcasts. So there's a lot of options out there. And as we continue to develop and refine them, hopefully that will give us a better chance to sustain ourselves in this rather murky future that seems to be lying ahead.
Exactly. And I've got to say that you've done an amazing job on covering the mainstream media, specifically Fox News, and Peter, because we value your time, and I want to thank Global Star Radio Network. We're going to skip the bottom of the hour break because you've got so much to offer here. But I think it's important for people to read what you've written about Fox News, in particular Sean Hannity. And if I can just toss this out there, I think it's important for people who are conservatives, and especially Christian conservatives, to support Sean Hannity. In other words, if you're on Twitter, tweet your support to Sean Hannity. The reason I say that is because, to me, he's the only one giving time to the important issues, and I believe at professional risk. And I think you point that out as well in your articles. But if I may, if you don't mind me saying that, I think that he needs our support.
I couldn't agree with you more, Doug, and I'm glad that you brought it up. I've gotten to know Sean in the past month or so on email and in several private off-the-record phone conversations, and as I think I have a pretty good sense after that kind of contact, he is the real deal. What you see is what you get. And just the quality of the content of his nightly broadcast on Fox News and his daily 3-hour syndicated radio show. So 4 hours a day, he is putting out content. Well, not quite 4 hours when you subtract the commercials. Maybe it's closer to 2 hours and 15 minutes, but it's a substantial amount of time that he's presenting an array of guests who are first rate, people like Sarah Carter, Greg Jarrett, other journalists and analysts who are advancing these stories that nobody else is presenting. And yes, he is imperiling, I would say, his future at Fox News. We'll see where that goes. But by the way, you and I have to get together off air to compare notes on that, because I'm preparing my next blockbuster story, and your input is going to be very valuable there. But
yeah, as a matter of fact, if folks talk amongst yourselves for a moment. Yeah, Peter, I do have something to send to you. In fact, you should have it tomorrow, and I will call you after you receive it.
Okay.
but okay.
And another, we don't want to overlook Tucker Carlson, who's on Fox News as well in prime time, 8 to 9 p.m. Eastern Time and Pacific Time, Monday through Friday. Tucker is a good guy, too. In fact, I wrote an article also today at American Thinker about Tucker's interview last night with Attorney General Sessions, the first on-camera interview that AG Sessions has given since all this brouhaha started with the criticisms of him by President Trump. And Tucker had to fly to El Salvador to do this interview outside of the U.S. Embassy in San Salvador on the grounds there with AG Sessions, who was in El Salvador to consult with the government there on trying to rein in the MS-13 international gang. And so I wrote an article about that. I try to highlight good things that Fox News and whatever other mainstream media do when they do it. Of course, Fox has some other good people, too. Judge Jeanine Pirro with her show that usually airs on Saturday night. Steve Hilton is a new hire on Sunday nights on Fox News from Great Britain. There's some criticisms of him, but I think his show is a cut above average. And Greg Jarrett, who doesn't have a show of his own, but he's an attorney and a frequent fill-in anchor host on Fox News, and he's been doing a lot of independent reporting on these stories that have been getting very short shrift in the mainstream media relating to cover-ups of Clinton crimes and Obama crimes and Debbie Wasserman Schultz potential crimes. So he's a great resource. So, you know, we have our criticisms of Fox News, and certainly I've expressed them in print. And my first several lengthy articles for American Thinker about Fox News in May were very critical. And I'm the one who named and took on the so-called Murdoch boys, the two 40-something sons of mogul Rupert Murdoch, the founder and transnational media mogul behind Fox News and 21st Century Fox. And these boys are now, his sons are now exerting more and more influence on Fox News, and they're left-wingers. So that's a potential fly in the ointment. We'll see what happens there. But
that was an excellent, by the way, the Murdoch boys piece that you wrote in American Thinker, absolutely required reading for Hagman listeners. I think there's more information in the one before and after that, really sets the stage really well, paints a wonderful picture, and it's, pardon the expression, dead nuts accurate. I mean, it's just fantastic. So, yes, and I know you're going to do a follow up. I want to toss in a couple other names. Neil Cavuto.
Oh yes, you know, of course, Neil Cavuto.
I actually was on his show once. Neil Cavuto. We have.
That was like 14 years ago, 15 years ago.
Yeah, I know, it was a while back. Yeah, it was 10 years ago anyway. Neil Cavuto, you've got. His name escapes me now. The other gentleman,
Charles Payne.
No, in the same vein of Neil Cavuto, I'm just trying to think of Lou Dobbs. Sorry about
Lou Dobbs. Oh, right. Absolutely, Lou Dobbs. Fantastic. And in the morning, of course, Cavuto and Lou Dobbs spend the majority of their time on the Fox Business Network. Although, of course, Cavuto also has an hour-long daily show on the Fox News Channel, and Lou Dobbs is often a guest on the Fox News Channel. But not to be overlooked as well is the Fox and Friends morning show, a show with a lighter touch, of course, 3 hours primarily on the curvy couch, as they describe it, in the morning from 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern Time, 3 to 6 a.m. Pacific Time. And the three hosts of that are pretty sincere, right of center, traditional people, and I think they do a pretty good job. Of course, they are fair and objective. They have both sides on. They have liberals and conservatives on. But I mean, when you compare it to what's on CNN or MSNBC at that hour, unwatchable programming. You know, Fox and Friends is definitely watchable. So You know, there are hours in the day when Fox is doing a credible job. I'll tell you one thing that really drives me crazy is, and I seem to be the only one who's taking note of this and occasionally writing about it, is the amount of time given to commercials on television across the board. I like to watch and study classic television from the beginning, the late 40s, the 50s, the 60s, when network programming ran, like an hour show ran for 56 minutes of content. Now it's been cut down to about 41 minutes, and on the cable news channels, it's 38 minutes or less. So it's really ridiculous now. You'll sometimes have a 2 or 3 minute content segment and then 3 or 4 minutes of commercials. And it does something to your brain to balance this noise of commercials. And of course, there's a lot of them. The 15 and 30 second commercial are rule the roost now. Used to be in the old days, there would be 4 commercial breaks on television, commercial television, in an hour. There would be a 1 minute commercial 3 times, and then a commercial break at the top of the hour for station identification and a local commercial. And there wasn't the noise and the garbage and the distraction that there is now. And I think it's contributed to people's low attention spans, lack of attention, and changing channels, clicking the remote, if we're still using a remote and watching conventional TV. I mean, how many times do you change the channel because you want to avoid the commercial, and you forget to go back to the channel that you were originally on, and you miss the segment that you were waiting for?
Peter, let me ask you this. I've heard this mentioned before, but I don't know how accurate it is. The whole purpose of cable TV and paying the cable provider a monthly fee for the subscription, was it not to... In paying that fee, wouldn't that forego commercials for the most part? Wasn't that the plan from the beginning?
There were many plans in the beginning, but they're greedy. I mean, when you look at Fox News Channel, for example, there's one channel that, if I'm remembering correctly off the top of my head, makes a profit of, I believe it's $1 billion. This is the Fox News Channel itself, $1 billion a year for 21st Century Fox.
Hannity alone brought in over $53 million, I believe it was last year, just from the advertisers on his one-hour TV show.
It's really, it's out of control. And then, of course, the talent on these channels are making obscene amounts of money. I mean, I've focused in particular on Megyn Kelly, formerly of Fox News, whose career is now in a tailspin at NBC. Her Sunday night show is crashing and burning, and I've read analysis this past week that it might not even be renewed for another season. She might just go to the third hour of the Today Show, 9 to 10 a.m. Monday through Friday Eastern Time, and forego a primetime show or an evening show altogether. But anyway, that woman is making, I think it's something like, I don't know. Well, she's making about $20 million a year from NBC. And, you know, if you divide that up by each show, it's 6 figures per show that she's making. Every time she does a one-hour show, 6 figures more go into her bank account. Now, this is just indefensible. I mean, I'm not against somebody making a lot of money, and maybe not, and certainly I don't want to put limits on what they make, but it's just out of whack, because when you pay somebody that much money out of scale to reality, it means that you're not hiring maybe 100 other people who could work for $100,000 a year and really help that network to do a better job. So they're cutting the jobs at the production level, at the support level, at the copy editing level, and they're paying it all to their star celebrity talent. So it's really seriously out of whack. And again, it's useful to keep this in mind as we're watching these people read the teleprompter and preach to us, because it's fake on the face of it. They're actors.
Yep.
They're celebrities. They're teleprompter readers, and very little more.
I don't even really remember a time in my lifetime at least not since I've been paying attention, and even before that, where you actually had TV personalities who were investigative journalists. You might have some on the scene reporting, you know, at some specific event, but as you just laid out, these people are actors. Nothing more, nothing less. They read what is written for them to read from the teleprompter, and they're paid, you know, just incredible amounts of money, as you just said, Megyn Kelly, $20 million a year. It's insanity. You know, they're making as much as movie stars in blockbuster films, if not more.
There was one journalist like that, TV journalist, who just died recently. His name was Gabe Pressman. He died well into his 90s. He worked for most of his career at WNBC, Channel 4, the NBC-owned and operated station in New York City. And I had some contact with him in the 1970s because he produced, for a short time, he went with what was then WNEW Channel 5 and did investigative reporting there. But he was a gumshoe reporter who hit the streets, who did investigations, who did his own reporting, as well as anchoring of local newscasts on Channel 4 for many years, and continued to work there even after he left on-camera work. He was writing articles for WNBC, but a really solid journalist of the old school who didn't need a teleprompter, probably read notes from a yellow pad in front of him. And just the quality of the questions that he asked me when he was interviewing me for a series he was doing on alternative cancer therapies in 1979 that aired in New York City. You know, a phenomenally intelligent and probing gentleman. So I took note of his passing and wished that I could have written an obituary for him, because he really deserved more than an honorable mention. But I'm afraid that as someone like him passes from the scene, who is there to follow in his footsteps? Nobody that I'm aware of. Maybe someone like Cheryl Atkinson, certainly, who's doing a fine job at Sinclair, and hopefully she will become more visible in years to come, having been off from CBS, where she did a wonderful job as an investigative journalist. But she's really doing excellent work.
Peter, if I can interject a question here before I forget, and before we run out of time, on the whole, as you look at the media, because you've studied this for decades and you know about this, are we making a difference? When I say by we, I'm talking about the media that is considered the new media, the alternative media. And by difference, what I'm saying is, are we reaching enough? A significant portion of the population right now, to where the corporate media looks at shows like ours, Alex Jones, InfoWars, and others like that, collectively or individually, and saying, wait a minute, we've got to, respond in some way or do something. You know, I don't know. Are we collectively and individually making a difference?
One indication, Doug, that we are substantially is when you look at the coverage that Megyn Kelly's show on Alex Jones got last month. I mean, the mainstream media came out of the woodwork to attack Alex Jones because Megyn Kelly gave him 11 minutes of NBC airtime on her Sunday night show. And the mainstream media is no fan of Megyn Kelly either, so it was a tough call for them. But the way they went after Alex and InfoWars, all the fake charges against him, and of course the cut-up hit job that Megyn Kelly and NBC did on Alex Jones, show that they're taking him and his audience very, very seriously. And I would say also in answer to that question that I would cite my own experience. I mean, I've been a professional journalist for pretty much my entire adult life, and my discovery of the internet in 1994, when I first got on the web, and the growth not long after that of an alternative media, and a significant alternative media, and an alt-right media at that, has made a profound difference in my life as a media professional, and the options it's given me for really cutting to the chase in so many stories and finding avenues of information and insight that if they existed previously, they were very, very difficult to find and to access. And I would also say that it's ultimately very difficult to us from where we sit. For example, the two of you who host your shows now and the people who work with you, it's hard to know really what kind of impact you're having and we're having, because there's still no really clear and objective, reputable way of measuring it. For television ratings, we have the Nielsen ratings, and of course there's quibbles about how they rate shows, but there's really nothing like it on the internet, especially when you get into the realm of streaming or podcasting and how to measure those audiences. And of course then there are indications that YouTube and the other platforms are rigging the numbers to downplay the audience that we actually have here. So God only knows at this point, but I think there's really no other alternative. We have found a pathway, again, thank God, to a means to get the truth out there, the truth as we see it, as we really see it and experience it, to an increasing number of like-minded folks who are open to it. And that's all we can do. I don't know what other alternative there is at this point. When I speak with Thomas Lipson, the editor of American Thinker, and he just celebrated his 70th birthday. I don't think he's keeping that a secret.
Happy birthday, Tom Lipson. Happy birthday,
he,
brother.
He and I joke when we talk on the phone occasionally about how we're getting so old, we're getting so up there. I mean, I think 85% of the American population is now younger than I am at this point, which is a sobering thought. But we joke about it and think, well, what other alternative is? We've lived long lives. We've been in media for all of our lives, and hopefully we've learned something. There's a maturity. We can still think and write and communicate. So that's what we do. We'll do it until probably we drop dead doing it. And that's just the way it's got to be. But, you know, it's satisfying too. It's great to find kindred spirits. I was so moved at the beginning of your show tonight, Doug, when you said that you feel like you found a brother here, and that's exactly how I feel about you guys. You are the two brothers I never had. I'm an only child, and that's how I feel about you. It's just phenomenal.
And that's something, you know, again, Steve Quayle always says God really puts people in our lives. He makes better friends for us than we can for ourselves. And I really appreciate that. And sometimes I think that that's a key in reaching others. There's a trust factor, isn't there, when we talk about the alternative media. Like the relationship reference, there's that trust factor. That's got to play a role, I think. When people listen to shows like ours or True News, or there's got to be some level of trust that's built in, right?
Well, and if you know this kind of media, if you want to call it alternative media, for lack of a better term, there are fewer layers between what you do, what I do when I'm on your show, or what I do when I write. Fewer layers between us and the audience than there are, for example, for what we see on mainstream television, even cable news, or what you read in a mainstream media publication, where there's so many layers of bureaucracy and filtering. I mean, it's why I've never, my mother used to joke and say about me, he's never worked a day in his life, because she could never point to a job that I actually ever had. I never worked for any publication on a paid basis. I always worked freelance, independent. And I think that was really a blessing that somehow I was able to pull it off, because I never had anybody at a higher level telling me what to do. Somehow I found publications where I clicked with the editors or the publishers. We were on the same wavelength for whatever length of time I was working with them and submitting my stuff. And I was always able to investigate stories, write for myself, write in my own voice, and somehow it would get published. And that's how it's working today with American Thinker. that's how it works when I come on with you guys. We just talk. We say what we think. There's no filter. There's nobody sitting behind us, telling us, ordering us what to think. And when you realize that the challenge that faces that face people like Sean Hannity, for example, I mean, God bless that guy for doing what he can do within the layers of producers, editors, executives who are calling the shots at Fox News. So it really, it's a miracle what he's been able to achieve and the others working in those venues. And I even have to credit, you know, yesterday, among the 100 or so articles or more that I read yesterday about Charlie Gard, there was one in the New York Times that I don't have it on my screen, but it was Dateline London by their European correspondent, I guess. And I had to say, you know, it was a really good article in the New York Times. I don't often say that. In fact, I hardly ever say it anymore. But it was a pretty straight, fair and objective article on the developments in the case of Charlie Gard. And I thought, well, God bless that reporter. And somehow it got published, it got in the paper, it got online. So, you know, it's possible. It's still possible, or should be, for the mainstream media, even the New York Times, to occasionally do an article that is a decent reflection of reality. I mean, it happens very rarely, but it can happen. If only we could get back to that point. And maybe what's propelling us back to that point, if we have a chance, is our embracing of the alternative media, having found this alternative paths to the truth. And we say, we're not going to put up with this crap anymore from the New York Times, the Washington Post, the broadcast networks. I mean, I just don't even access those channels anymore unless I absolutely have to. I don't watch them or read them routinely. I mean, it's an absolute waste of time. It just makes you angry to see the lies and have to live with them and dissect them. And so we go elsewhere, right? And that elsewhere is what it's all about now. And we can feel it. We know it's growing. I mean, it's growing organically. It's multiplying. And I mean, just look at the example of the Hagman Report. What you guys have achieved in the last number of years, particularly the fast track that you're on now with the new expansion of an extra 2 hours a day. And the incredible quality of the production that you're putting out. I mean, it's absolute, what you're doing is absolutely ready for prime time now. There is no longer a technological barrier between you and the audience. It's professional production. It's appointment viewing. And this is being duplicated all over the internet, not in the way that you're doing it, because I put you at the top of my list, but certainly Alex Jones has been doing it for years. He's sometimes a little more than I can take in the morning, but you know, I appreciate what Alex has done, and he's running a professional operation there. Yes. And he built it up from absolutely nothing, from cable access to where he's at today, so that he could go toe to toe with Megyn Kelly and more than hold his own. So, you know, God bless Alex Jones and, you know, all the other people I listen to routinely, Jan Markell on the weekends, you know, even on regular terrestrial radio, Mark Levin,
yep.
Sean Hannity, on the weekends, Bill Cunningham, great American, I like what he does. I mean, there's a lot of folks out there, mainly in talk radio, mainstream talk radio, and on the internet, you know, too many to mention. And then we develop our favorites, our comfort level, that trust level. That's so important, what you brought up, developing a level of trust. And I mean, that's what I got from you guys from the first time I started listening to you. I read your stuff first, Doug, in Canada Free Press, and then I discovered your program on Block Talk Radio in 2012, I think it was. And right from the outset, you just came across in that much less sophisticated time of production and production values and presentation. There was an honesty, a validity, a reality, a sincerity, a clarity, and a truth to what you were saying. For I think it was 2 hours a night at that point.
It was. Good memory. I had
I mean, I became addicted to your show right from that point. And, you know, I've continued to check in with you ever since. And when you made the leap to video on YouTube 2 years ago, I mean, I was hooked.
Well, you know, so, if I can ask this question, because I wrote this down, and I'm really curious. From your perspective, and again, folks, Peter Berichalka is our guest. Check his articles out, not just at the Hagman Report, but at American Thinker. But my question is this. When you consider the alternative media, the new media, the independent media perhaps is the best word or best descriptive phrase, are more people, are they more influenced by the video medium, the audio medium as in a radio program, or the written word as an article, we'll say on, a popular website? What influences people more, in your opinion? Or is it a combination of all three?
It's a combination, but I would have to say, and I'm actually sorry to have to say this, that number one is video, number two is audio, and number three is the written word.
That's not what I was expecting, by the way. I was expecting
The reason I say I'm sorry to say that is I think the written word, the printed word, the websites that print articles of any length are going out of style. I've actually heard this for years, even when I was still writing for print publications. The editors starting in the 80s even, and certainly in the 90s, were saying, you got to write shorter, write quicker, write faster, write shorter. And I actually had this conversation with Thomas Lifson of American Thinker early this morning, and he's encouraging me to do more blog articles of very short length, 200-400 words. And he says those are the ones that get on social media. They get tweeted around and Facebooked around. And I've written articles as long as 4,000 words for American Thinker, and I know he dislikes publishing things that long, although he's made an exception in my case. But I think just because someone clicks on a 4,000-word article doesn't mean they read the whole thing. And, you know, it's what will fit on a phone now. If it's a 2-minute, 1-minute, or 2-minute clip that will play on the phone, that's going to get tweeted. If it's, an audio podcast that you can listen to while you're doing something else, you know, that's viable. And coming in a third now, and I hope it's not a distant third, is the written word, because that's still my first love, although I love video and audio media as well. Talk radio was my first love, starting in the 1960s, in addition to the written word, the printed word. But we're going into a post-literate, post-print culture, and so it's going to be what you see is what you get from now on.
Very interesting. Peter, we only have just a few minutes left until the break. I want to ask you this. The Scaramucci, the tensions that we've seen in the White House, from the leaks to the getting rid of Spicer to the Trump going after Sessions, what's your view of Scaramucci and his ability to get to the bottom of these problems? Do you think he's helping or hurting the administration?
Well, when he first was introduced as a key player within the past week in the administration, I thought, well, President Trump could probably use somebody like that to clean out the stable, or however you want to term it. Now, there have been a few strategic blips since then, including his off-the-record, on-the-record comments to the New Yorker or New York magazine a day or two ago. But I don't know. I continue, well, and of course in the news today is the resignation of Ryan Priebus, who's going to be a guest on Sean Hannity's Fox News show tonight, apparently. But I don't know. These personnel changes are coming fast and furious, and I continue to hold out hope that the regime there, the Trump regime, will settle in and will be able to get the work done in the face of the deep state sewer, as President Trump is now calling it, not only the swamp, but the sewer. And God help us if he can't. But I continue to be optimistic and think that, what other option is there? We have no other option. So I think that deep down, most of these people who have worked with President Trump probably mean well and probably want to do well. He's a mercurial difficult, unusual character. And he just has to get the team that will work with him. And meanwhile, he's got Mueller, you know, nipping at his heels and all this other nonsense going on. I mean, will this ever end? So, you know, I cite again what Paul McGuire had to say on your show several weeks ago in his analysis of what President Trump is being subjected to in kind of a psychological warfare way. I thought that was really a brilliant analysis. So, you know, our prayers go out to President Trump and his team.
Amen.
And, you know, it's going to be interesting to watch. It's an interesting show, but I try not to get too caught up in the players. I think, well, are they changing deck chairs on the Titanic, or is this really a substantial effort to move the agenda forward? And you know, I really hope it's the latter. I continue to hold out hope for that.
Indeed. And, Peter, we've reached the end of our time together, and I so appreciate your appearance with us. I want to mention this. It was a week ago, 2 years a week ago today, that your good friend, Dr. Nicholas Gonzalez, passed away. And to commemorate his life, I just want to say, you know, well, I just want to make sure people know of that, if that's okay. Hopefully that's all right.
Absolutely. Yeah. And a website about him is drgonzalez.com, dr-gonzalez.com.
Okay.
Or thehealers.info.
Thehealers.info. All right. And
thank you.
God bless you, my friend. Thank you so much.
God bless both of you.
And I'll talk to you tomorrow. I'll give you a call tomorrow. All right.
Thanks,
Peter. Can't wait.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Peter Barry Choka, that was our guest, a journalist from The American Thinker, also writes for The Hagmann Report. Folks, we'll be right back after this network break. Don't go anywhere.
Just what kind of thriller predicts the future? In 3 days in the Belly of the Beast, Daniel Holdings wrote about the God Particle before CERN actually discovered the God Particle. In As the Darkness Falls, Daniel wrote about an Islamist terrorist confederacy that rose up out of Syria and declared a caliphate 3 years before ISIS was ever heard of. In his newest novel, Between the Veil, Daniel talks about a space between dimensions where supernatural beings can walk. He says that these novels are a warning from the Creator to his creation. Will war come to America? Will the world's economies collapse? Are we looking at increased earthquakes and volcanic activity? Will the United States fall into civil war? You can find all of Daniel's work at his website, DanielHoldings.com. That's DanielHoldings.com. All of these things and more are talked about in Daniel's books. To find out what's coming next, go to DanielHoldings.com.
Worldwide demand is making coconuts one of the highest-yielding cash crops available today. Coca-Cola, Pepsi, and many high-net-worth individuals have invested billions of dollars into coconuts for strong growth and solid long-term income. Yields could be as high as 18% or more per year. Capital appreciation and exceptional income for up to 60 long years would be an absolutely brilliant investment to pass on to future generations. Diversify wisely with direct ownership of fully managed coconuts on prime farmland close to the beautiful Costa Rican border. For more information, qualified accredited investors should go to profitsincoconuts.com or phone 855-888-6288. That's 855-888-6288. This announcement does not constitute an offer to sell securities or a solicitation of an offer to purchase. Offer made by prospectus only. 855-888-6288 or visit profitsincoconuts.com. Profitsincoconuts.com.
You may never look at your city, town, or its people the same way ever again. Stained by Blood, a murder investigation based upon a true story by private investigator Douglas J. Hagmann. Using the character Mark Stiles, Hagmann takes you on a journey behind the scenes where the homicide becomes secondary to an underworld of satanic ritual abuse, child abduction, and even mind-controlled experimentation. For 5 years, a brutal killer remained on the loose, free to kill again. As Mark struggles to navigate the maze of bizarre twists and untangle a web of deeply hidden secrets kept by some of the most powerful and influential people in his community and beyond. Stained by Blood. Order your copy of this engaging novel today at HagmannandHagmann.com and click on the link. Stained by Blood at HagmannandHagmann.com and click on the link. Stained by Blood.